Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are in grave, grave danger. Far be it from me. You know, Dick Cheney is going on all the act shows now saying we're safe. We kept America safe for 7 years. Wasn't there 7 years after the World Trade Center was attacked in 1993 when we weren't attacked again? So I guess Clinton kept us safer, too. Anyway, we are in such danger today. Dateline Yemen. The attorney for Osama bin Laden's former driver says his client has been released from a Yemeni prison after serving his sentence. Salim Ahmed Hamdan was released Friday. Oh, God. We've been unsafe for two whole days. His driver, ladies and gentlemen, first guy to get a trial at Gitmo. Has to be the worst of the worst. Osama's driver. You see what I'm saying? He can be driven again. A Yemeni Interior Ministry official confirmed the release, but said it happened Saturday. These people cannot be trusted. He spoke on condition of anonymity. The reason for the discrepancy was unclear. Hamdan had already served 5 years and a month at Gitmo when he was sentenced to 5.5 years. Convenient. All right, I'm scared. I don't know about you. I'm a scared. Osama's driver is loose. What are these Yemenis doing? And now, ladies and gentlemen.
High def, low def, no def, take my hand. It's a digital wonderland. Got to be so careful where you stand in the digital wonderland.
Well, so much about the digital wonderland, of course, as that deadline of switching off analog TV approaches. From Dan, Harry, here's some more news about the digital debacle. I've noticed for the past few months that the picture on my local TV channels, CBS, NBC, etc. That's right, The Simpsons is on, etc. has not been coming in properly. The left and right edges have been cropped. It's gotten to the point where nightly news anchors' heads are cut off. You insert your joke here. As are the network logos and tickers at the bottom of the screen. When I complained to my cable company about the problem, they informed me that it was a result of their preparations for the digital conversion. Apparently, they have devised a decidedly low-tech solution for the transmission of local channels. Basically, they are taking the new digital feed and are reconverting it to analog and then retransmitting it via the old antenna. The only problem is the digital-to-analog conversion process results in a picture that is not properly sized. All this, I was told, was meant to avoid chaos come February. I was further informed the only way to solve the problem would be to buy a new digital TV. Dear Harry, Colin writes, I was once a digital skeptic like yourself and viewed the coming change with something akin to horror. Not being one to turn down a partial tax refund, however, I signed up for a digital coupon and boy has my outlook changed. I live in hilly Pittsburgh and fuzzy reception has always been a problem. Now, however, the channels are sharp and clear. When they come in at all. This is due in no small part to my powered antenna, which, once tuned, provides crystal clear reception, at least until the weather changes, the TV is turned off, or someone is rude enough to move. Because of this, it is often necessary to turn the antenna and rerun the channel scan during a given show each time, wondering whether we'll get the channel back. Reception aside, digital has opened me up to a world of new channels. I get one all-Christian rock channel, two full-time weather feeds, the Home Shopping Network, and the Retro Television Network. Matthew writes, like many, I applied for coupons offered by the government to subsidize the purchase of a digital converter box for my television. I received the stated two coupons valued at $40 each, and after confirming that they still had some in stock, went to my local Circuit City to pick up my unit. They had one listed at $59.99. When I went to check out, I was told I could only redeem one coupon per unit and would have to pay the difference out of my own pocket. I spent several minutes arguing with the manager, as at no point in the literature that accompanied the coupons is there a stipulation, direct or otherwise, stating that they cannot be used in conjunction with one another. The manager was not swayed by this argument. I don't plan to take this lying down. I'm writing to the agency overseeing the program to demand reimbursement for my funds. Joel writes, I find your remarks on DTV spot on. I only wish I could get to the stage of frustration with boxes, but as yet I have yet to receive the coupons I ordered from DTV Answers back in September. I don't even have a box. I was told first they were delayed in the mail and then told probably lost in the mail and that they, DTV Answers, were not responsible, nor would they reissue coupons. At their site's recommendation, I found a family member who has cable and would not need their coupons, so I reordered coupons through their name and was met with the same results. I'm curious as to how happy will the media outlets be that 30 to 40% of their market share will cease to tune in on February 17th. Well, maybe, maybe not. You do know, because several of you wrote in to point out, that the digital TV converter box coupons, not only in short supply, they've run out. The agency responsible for sending them out has run out of money. And the chairman of the Federal Communications Commission has now responded to the Obama administration's or pre-administration's suggestion that the delay, that the digital switchover be delayed because of all the confusion. FCC Chairman Kevin Martin, at a meeting about the digital cock-up, says despite the fact that a dozen people complained to him that coupons had expired after 90 days before they could purchase converters, and the government will not reissue coupons for the same address, Martin recommends that those needing coupons ask a friend, neighbor, or relative who don't need the converters to apply for coupons for them. Find someone else to apply and get them for you. They are fully transferable, says one who tried it. The neighbor was required to lie about needing coupons for his own home. That's not right to make you falsify an application, the person asked Martin. Kevin Martin, head of the FCC, agreed, but said that's what the coupon agency is telling people to do. They're saying it's okay. I'm here to tell you it's okay. Lie to the government, the FCC head says to do so. And he also says it's important to make sure that the converter box program gets on track and that the switchover not be delayed because it could cause confusion to customers. Like the, There is a continuing problem with lip sync problems. We've come now 53, 54 years, 55 years in the history of television in America, and finally we've reached the wonderland where audio and video are, more often than not, out of sync. Says one technical blogger, he's heard from experts around the country that the lip sync malady is one of the dirty little secrets of digital television that the industry has failed or refused to address. Nick Johnson of Felston Lip Fix Technology in South Carolina has a business in fixing it, so apparently it's enough of a problem. In reality, there's no single culprit responsible for lip sync error. It can start at image capture and creep in at every point within the broadcast chain where there is digital image processing, potentially delaying video more than audio. There's a research paper on it at Stanford University. And says another tech blogger, the available digital converter boxes are confusing to many viewers. Even if they get everything hooked up right, many people will find that their reception under the digital regime is unacceptable due to coverage variations and differing antenna requirements. The antenna configurations were not designed for digital signals, and in whole strips of America's rural fringe areas are going to lose signals even with new antennas. Tom Olibone of Teletruth went to customers' homes in Hunterdon County, New Jersey, to do real-world testing, which was not done by the agency that mandated the original switchover. He found that in that rural New Jersey county, 100% of New York TV channels were not available, even though those rural residents live in, theoretically, the New York metropolitan area. And the Hawaii desk advises that power outage over Christmas, fried the digital converter box. It is a digital wonderland. Hello, welcome to the show. Or is it now called Sri Lanka?
Harry Shearer, I'm going to get you.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry. Thank you, Katie. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. Vice President Cheney, speaking of rivers, speaking of the administration's all-purpose answer, nobody thought this was going to happen. It was said during the Katrina thing, which wasn't really about a river. It was about levees, but he now says, in one of his many interviews this week, that President Bush has no need to apologize to the American people for not doing more to head off the financial calamity, saying, no one saw it coming. No one could possibly have imagined that these people would still be in office. Speaking of which, here are people who do have to apologize. The apologies of the week.
we're so sorry.
Well, let's start at the top. President-elect Obama, according to Dianne Feinstein, apologized to her, she's a senator, of course, for not notifying her ahead of time that Leon Panetta was his pick for CIA director. His name leaked to the press before Obama informed Feinstein, the incoming head of the Intelligence Committee. And her senatorial feathers were ruffled, but they've now been smoothed over. Three of China's most popular search engines have apologized for being slow to remove links to pornographic material following the Chinese government's pledge this week to crack down on vulgar content on the web. Officials publicly criticized 19 internet sites and operators, including Google, Baidu, and Sina Corporation, for disregarding warnings about carrying offending content. "We feel deeply guilty," Baidu wrote in a statement on its website, as translated by Reuters. "We apologize to internet users for any negative effects given to society." Sina also issued a public apology. Neil Donald Walsh, the author of Conversations with God, said he was embarrassed and mystified as he apologized this week for having misrepresented another's work as his own. Walsh, whose 1996 book remained a bestseller for more than 2 years, wrote in his blog that he had made a serious error when his first-person account of a touching moment during a Christmas concert turned out to be an anecdote lifted from the writing and life experience of another writer, Candy Chand. Candy Chand. Walsh resigned his role as a BeliefNet blogger, effective immediately. "I've told the story verbally so many times over the years that I had it memorized and then somewhere along the way internalized it as my own experience. I'm aghast at how improbable this sounds, even to me. Yet I can find no other explanation for how this story came out of my mouth in Candy Chan's words." Neither Walsh nor BeliefNet described the incident as plagiarism. God told him to say it. Amman, Dateline, Amman, Jordanian Prime Minister Nader Dahabi apologized for the beating by police of four Al Jazeera cameramen and the news network's Amman bureau chief during a demonstration outside the Israeli embassy in Jordan's capital. Dahabi made a personal visit to extend his apology to the director of Al Jazeera's Amman office, who was being treated in the hospital for injuries suffered in the melee. That's the most painful place to be injured, by the way, the melee. Very rarely heals correctly. The beatings drew protests from Jordanian journalists in their organized syndicate and the Foreign Correspondents Club. Scores of protesters were also beaten. But they're not journalists. Who cares about them? Dateline Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. A man who allegedly squatted in the attic of a Pennsylvania family's home over Christmas and helped himself to their belongings is sorry and upset it happened, his lawyer says this week. Police say 21-year-old Stanley Carter stole food, clothing, cash, and Christmas presents while living in the attic of Stacy Ference's home outside Wilkes-Barre. Carter waived his right to a preliminary hearing. His attorney, public defender Basil Rusin, says Carter is very sorry and upset it happened. He was very peaceful up there and kept to himself. Carter even kept a list of everything he took, labeling it Stanley's Christmas List, according to police. Dateline Hotlanta, Atlanta police and city officials apologized after slapping a television news crew in handcuffs, Jordanian style, for videotaping inside City Hall. WGCL reporter Renee Starzik and photographer Jeff Thorne knew city offices were closed Friday, but people can go to pay their water bills, and the pair wanted to catch up with customers who've had billing problems. They said the officer who let them through security told them to stop videotaping as soon as they started. Starzik says after she and Thorne moved from the water department area and started taping in the lobby, also a public area, they were arrested and detained for at least an hour. That's a good journalist. At least an hour. How long were you detained, Stacy? At least an hour. The mayor's chief of staff, Greg Pridgen, later told a WGCL news manager it was a terrible misunderstanding, as opposed to those wonderful misunderstandings we have every day. Hey, Canada. Hello, Canada. The producers of Quebec's wildly popular New Year's Eve bye-bye special apologized this week to Quebecers who were offended by the latest edition. Véronique Cloutier and Louis Morissette took no questions from reporters as they held a news conference in a downtown Montreal hotel to respond to allegations that some sketches were racist and others were in extreme bad taste. The couple who produced this year's edition of Bye Bye with their company, Novim, said, no, it's not a medication, said they were deeply sorry their humor was taken the wrong way. We were sorry for having shocked people, and we are saddened at this development because it was not the objective, said Cloutier. All we wanted to do was have a night that would entertain people, that would be audacious, funny, and find an equilibrium between things that are skating and things that would interest another type of the public there. Golden Globe organizers, yes, it is organized, despite what it looks like, have apologized for a blunder on the awards website, which suggested that Anne Hathaway had already won a Best Actress award. An asterisk appeared on the list next to Hathaway's name on the website, even though the Golden Globes do not take place until tonight. A nominee was randomly marked as a winner by mistake, statement on the Golden Globes website said. The mistake was immediately corrected. Golden Globes are sorry, ladies and gentlemen. After declaring he was proud of his years of public service, a veteran Gloucester County police chief was escorted to prison this week for stealing $180,000 from Mothers Against Drunk Drivers. Where's Gloucester? Well, anyway. Frank Winters, chief of the Clayton Police Department for 23 years before he resigned 2 years ago, was sentenced to 7 years in state prison. He was the appointed state chairman of MAD, fraudulently billing the organization from 2001 to 2004 for promotional items that were never delivered. He owned the companies that were supposed to provide keychains, pins, and other trinkets. Instead, he spent the money on his mortgage, car, furniture, jewelry, and vacations. I apologize for the inconvenience to this court, Winters said after a rambling speech in which he talked about the difficult decisions he had to make during his career with the police department. I'm still very proud of my service. He did not apologize for the theft. Deadline Bogota, Colombia. Colombia coffee growers are brewing up a lawsuit. That's the Associated Press is writing. Over an Ohio cartoonist comic strip joking about violence in Colombia. It says it will sue cartoonist Mike Peters for damage and harm, detriment to intellectual property and defamation. Peters is offering his sincerest apology to anyone who was offended, he told the Associated Press. He loves Colombian coffee. Deadline Taipei, the National Immigration Agency, apologized this week for allowing 8 people on a terrorist watch list to leave or enter Taiwan while its computer system had crashed earlier this month. Director General Zi Li Kung said 5 people who were barred from leaving the country for various reasons such as tax evasion slipped out of Taiwan, while 3 people who were on a list to be denied entry got into the country. Zi said the agency has taken remedial measures to address the lapse. The United States Army mistakenly sent letters addressed Dear John Doe to 7,000 family members of soldiers who died in Iraq and Afghanistan, unleashing calls from troubled relatives and prompting a formal apology this week from the Army's top general. The indication that anyone would perceive that a hero is not significant, that they would not direct it personally to them, is shattering, says a mother whose son died in Iraq. The letters were mailed late last month by the Army's Casualty and Mortuary Affairs Operations Center in Alexandria, Virginia, containing information about private organizations that assist families of the fallen. But when the Army called a printing error by a contractor, the letters did not contain specific names and addresses, but just Dear John Doe, who, as far as we know, is still alive. Deadline Washington, Hollywood actor Josh Brolin has apologized for his expletive-filled comments he made about Russell Crowe at the New York Film Critics Awards. The 40-year-old actor has blamed his alcohol intake and the ambience of the ceremony. What is the ambience of the ceremony? For what he said while receiving an award for Best Supporting Actor in Milk. Brolin called his American Gangster co-star Russell Crowe an a-hole. It was the ambience of the room. I love Crowe. I think he's amazing. He's a friend. I was bummed out when I saw that. He also launched an attack on newspaper critic Ben Brantley, who panned his Broadway performance 8 years ago. Way to not hold a grudge, babe. Take it from me. Deadline London, Britain's Prince Harry has issued a public apology after a British newspaper published video footage of him using offensive and racist language. The News of the World, barely a newspaper, reported that Harry, third in line for the British throne, used offensive terms to refer to people from Pakistan and people of Arab descent. Harry is an Army lieutenant and is purported to have made the remarks in 2006 in an airport departure lounge as soldiers waited to travel to Cyprus. In the video, Harry referred to one colleague as our little Paki friend, using a derogatory term for people of Pakistani origin. It reported that he called another cadet who was wearing a headscarf a raghead. The video was filmed by other cadets and supplied to the newspaper. St. James's Palace says Harry was sorry for any offense caused by the use of his word Paki. Prince Harry fully understands how offensive this term can be and is extremely sorry for any offense his words might cause. However, on this occasion 3 years ago, Prince Harry used the term without any malice and is a nickname about a highly popular member of his platoon. There is no question that Prince Harry was in any way seeking to insult his friend. The spokesman said Harry had used the other offensive term to refer to either the Taliban or Iraqi insurgency. If I was him, I'd blame the ambience in the lounge. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. It is a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. So the Bush and Cheney legacy tour continues, and it has resulted in some interesting conversations. In a way. But there are those who think that the questions directed at the president and the vice president have been a little on the wiffle ball side, a little soft. There are those who think the questions have not been soft enough. We'll hear from them moments from now on the show.
Harry Shearer, I'm going to get you.
I'm right here, babe.
Não. Ziyah e uma escapulida. Não morro, faço samba mesmo assim.
Washington, D.C. tonight. Three recording because we just couldn't get the live thing working. Our exclusive guest for the full hour is President George W. Bush. And maybe he's only got a few days left in power, but the man still has clout. We got brisket and rye here in the Oval Office, flown in from Nathan Al's. So we all ate, we all had something fizzy, now we can get down to work. Mr. President, yeah. I know you're not big on looking back. Staring at your navel, that sort of thing.
Well, Larry, you get to be my age. You feel lucky if you can even see your navel.
Mr. President, you get to be my age, you're lucky you still have a navel. But at a moment like this, mm-hmm. when your power is slipping away,
yeah.
how do you feel?
Well, Larry, seriously, this was never about my power. The only power I brought to this job was the power of prayer and the power of listening closely to what the good Lord's plan for me was.
Uh-huh. And what was it?
Well, you've kind of seen it, Larry, these last 7-plus years. A freedom agenda, a compassion agenda, and smite thy enemies, lest they smite ye first agenda.
Yeah. Is that last one actually from the Bible?
As good as.
You know, sir, you tell people you're doing an interview with the president. They say, well, you better ask him something he hasn't been asked before.
That's not easy, Larry.
Tell me about it. So I did some research, you know, read some of my old columns, and I think I got a couple. Have you ever had a better summer fruit than a freestone peach?
Well, I really don't remember what kinds of peaches we had in, back in Texas. Mm-hmm. I guess I'll find out pretty soon. You know, Laura's had enough of the ranch life, so I guess I'll have to have the Secret Service find some brush for me to clear someplace in Dallas.
When you think of the great New York Yankee teams, isn't 1927 still the year to beat?
I don't know, Larry. You know, I just wish we could have had some of those fellas playing for the Rangers when I owned the club.
Mm. And most of them had died by then. You still could have used them.
That's right.
And now you've had the war, the whole Katrina thing, mm-hmm. the economy now.
Yeah.
Anything you regret?
Well, like you said, Larry, I don't like to look back. And you can't regret the future. You know, it hasn't happened yet. So, no. I mean, sure, there's stuff I wish we'd done differently.
Like?
Well, I wish we'd had our 10 a.m. meetings at 10:30. Could have used that extra half hour in the gym, you know. Oh, I'll tell you what. I wish we'd been better at getting our story across. You know, you talk to people who've worked for me, and they all say, I'm not a dumb guy, that I'm pretty damn good decider. I ask tough questions, and we still managed to get the meetings ended right on time. But you know as well as anybody, Larry, that's not the popular view of me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not complaining, of course, but I'm just wishing we'd had a few more Carl Rose around to, you know, get the truth out there, so I guess that's one regret.
Wasn't the late Bob Goulet in his prime the perfect Broadway leading man?
Gee, I guess so. Laura really loves Howard Keel.
No, but he was more MGM than a true Broadway guy. How's Laura taking the move?
Oh, you know, she's looking forward to getting back into the kitchen again and telling the cook what to make.
Mm. Now, you're going from a job as the busiest man in the country to something that looks, you know, a lot like retirement. Mm-hmm. Any idea what your days will be like after January 20th?
Well, probably wake up a little later, you know, 6:30.
Mm-hmm.
Probably get on the bike by 8, back in the house by 10. Lunch at 1, prayer meetings with a small group, 3 to 4,
mm-hmm.
early dinner,
mm-hmm.
around 6. In bed by 10. So, yeah, pretty good idea what my days will be like. Of course, you know, it's different on the weekends.
Mr. President, what do you think of Sarah Palin? Some people say she's like a younger female you.
Yeah, I've heard that. Mm-hmm. Look, you can't go into national politics expecting not to have the media do a job on you. You know, that's just that just comes into the territory. So that's one reason why you keep up a line of communication with the fellow upstairs. You know, he's tough, but he's fair, which, you know, is more than you can expect from the Washington elite media corps.
Well, you don't sound sorry to be leaving.
Well, you know, I'm not sorry. I'm not sorry. I'm just, you know, look, my life is a book with lots of chapters. It's a real chapter book. And so, you know, sure, you're sorry when a chapter ends, but, you know, what's next?
Is that a subtle way of announcing you got a book deal?
Larry, just ask your friends at CNN. I don't do subtle. You know, I really don't.
Mm.
No, it's just a way of referencing reading. You know, it's funny. At this particular time in my soon-to-be ex-presidency, I do think back to a passage from a book I was reading around the time of 9/11. You know, it's the one about the goat wondering who his new neighbor's going to be.
Mm.
You know, I guess it's not like as if I'm relating to the goat.
Speaking of books, if you look in the dictionary under author, don't you see a picture of John Grisham?
Yeah, I guess so, Larry. Not the biggest dictionary reader in the world. I guess your friends at CNN can tell you that.
A couple of names. Just tell me first thing you think of. Dick Cheney.
Iron.
Your father, the former president.
Six iron.
Your mother.
Ironing.
Well, Mr. President, before we close out this segment, they just want me to say that tomorrow night, together for the first time, Scott Peterson and Drew Peterson.
Hey, might set the Devo and watch that myself.
Thank you, sir. When we come back after the break, more with George W. Bush.
Or maybe not.
Crying, well, I've done everything, and now I'm sick of trying.
This is the show, and now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. From the Asia Times, Washington loses a vital link. Dayline Karachi, in line with a compliance list recently handed over by Assistant Secretary of State for South Asia, Richard Boucher, Pakistan was due this week to launch a crackdown against the Lashkar-e-Toiba, LET, and other jihadist organizations. But the operation, which was to be coordinated by the Ministry of Interior Police and the Intelligence Bureau in Pakistan, was halted at the 11th hour by the Pakistani military establishment. Well-placed contacts in Pakistan's intelligence loins have told Asia Times. And instead, powerful National Security Advisor, retired Major General Mahmoud Durrani, was fired. He and other senior government officials had earlier admitted that the sole survivor of the Mumbai attacks was Pakistani. The man had already been linked to the LET, a banned group in Pakistan. Durrani had been a crucial link between the U.S., the government of Pakistan, and the Pakistani military. Interestingly, separate object from the government of Pakistan. The head of Central Command, David Petraeus, is soon to launch a surge in Afghanistan. At the same time, Pakistan's tribal areas, where militants have extensive bases, will become open hunting grounds for Afghan and Pakistani tribal militias. But the first segment of the American move toward India has now been shot down, with Durrani's dismissal throwing into doubt the remaining part. This leaves the civilian government of Pakistan awkwardly caught between the competing desires of the U.S., and its own military establishment. For the first time, you think? After the exit of former President General Perv and the election of a civilian government, Durrani's role as a go-between became crucial as he tried to balance the pressures on the two governments. Durrani had a close rapport with American decision-makers on South Asian affairs and had been involved in back-channel American efforts on disputed Kashmir and in Afghanistan. He was, for a time, Pakistan's ambassador in Washington. Provincial home departments had prepared lists of wanted militants, and action was about to start this past Thursday after Durrani and others had set the scene by admitting that the Mumbai bomber was Pakistani. This was too much for the Pakistani military leaders, and they issued a note of advice to the president and prime minister that Durrani had to go immediately. The government buckled, and Washington has lost a vital point man as it prepares for a new phase in Afghanistan. It's news about our friends in our friends Pakistan, ladies and gentlemen. They're our friends. Can't get, you know, it's not like they're not our friends. Don't get me wrong. News from outside the bubble, however, is, don't get me right here, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, Glenn Yarborough steps Mike's side to introduce News of the Warm, won't he?
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
Yes, we can. It's the award-winning Listen to the Warm. Deadline Canberra, Australia. Climate change and rising sea levels pose one of the biggest threats to security in the Pacific and may also spark a global conflict over energy reserves under melting Arctic ice. This according to a new report, a confidential security review by Australia's Defence Force completed 2 years ago but just obtained by the Sydney Morning Herald, says environmental stress has increased the risk of conflicts in the Pacific over resources and food. But the biggest threat of global conflict lies beneath the Arctic, as melting ice caps give rise to an international race for undersea oil and gas deposits, it says. There's a 90% chance that 3 billion people will have to choose between going hungry and moving their families to milder climes because of climate change within 100 years, says new research, according to New Scientist. The study forecasts that temperatures at the close of this century are likely to be above those that crippled food supplies on at least three occasions since 1900. David Battiati, a climatologist at the University of Washington, used 23 models. Man, where can I get that gig? Oh, computer models, vetted by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change to calculate how temperatures will vary with climate change. His team focused on temperatures during growing seasons around the world. This allowed them to determine the effect on food supplies. The results show there's a 90% chance that average temperatures in the tropics and subtropics will be higher than the hottest heat waves of the past century. More than 3 billion people live in those areas, most of whom rely heavily on locally produced food. The effects could be catastrophic. Not as catastrophic as Osama's driver being free, but a widespread and severe coral bleaching episode is predicted to cause immense damage to some of the world's most important marine environments over the next few months. This is from Science Daily. A report from the U.S. government's National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, predicts severe bleaching for parts of the Coral Sea, which lies adjacent to Australia's Great Barrier Reef, and the Coral Triangle, a 5.5 million square kilometer expanse of the ocean in the Indo-Pacific, which is considered the center of the world's marine life. This forecast bleaching episode will be caused by increased water temperature and is the kind of event we can expect on a regular basis if average global temperatures rise above 2 degrees, says Richard Leck, climate change strategy leader for the World Wildlife Fund's Coral Triangle program. The bleaching is predicted to occur between now and February, could have a devastating impact on coral reef ecosystems, killing coral and destroying food chains. There would be severe impacts for communities in Australia and the Pacific who depend on the oceans for their livelihood. The Coral Triangle, from the Philippines to Malaysia and Papua New Guinea, is home to 75% of all known coral species. More than 120 million people rely on its marine resources. And also from Science Daily, climate change will have or can have significant impacts on high elevation lakes and imperiled Sierra Nevada yellow-legged frogs that depend on those high-elevation lakes, according to the U.S. Forest Service and UC Berkeley scientists. Their findings show how a combination of the shallow lakes drying up in summer and predation by introduced trout in larger lakes severely limits the amphibian's breeding habitat and can cause its extinction. But hey, it's just a frog. It's not like a talking gecko or anything, you know? News of the Warm, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Dateline, Toledo, Ohio. Oh, and before we get to that, some items about nuclear waste. Just because it's clean, safe, cheap, too cheap to meter, clean. Nuclear waste allegedly leaked from a site at Bradwell, UK. Just a power station, not anything big or anything, just a nuclear power station. For 14 years before the problem was discovered. A court heard this week how the poor original design of a sump used to hold the waste and no routine inspection or maintenance That was the other thing that led to the leaks. No routine inspection or maintenance because it's a nuclear power plant. Why would you want that? It's too cheap, safe, and... The owners of the former power station face a total of 11 charges brought under the 1993 Radioactive Substances Act. Nuclear waste ordered to be removed from the South Australian desert after atomic tests in the 1950s may have been, rather than shipped to the UK as it was supposed to have been, dumped at sea. It has been a mystery as to how much radioactive waste was at Maralinga, Australia, following the tests and what the then-reluctant British government did with it. Declassified British documents released publicly this week reveal that the final resting place of the plutonium that had littered the desert was probably the ocean floor. Britain agreed to secretly remove 500 grams of plutonium and about 20 kilograms of radioactive waste intermingled with debris at the site that the Brits contaminated between 55 and 63. So they agreed because they wanted to win favor with the then prime minister to secure exports of mined uranium. But the condition was that the final resting place was never publicly revealed and that Australia would never again make a cleanup request. So we dumped it. Now, you may have heard this. Deadline Toledo, Ohio. A new reporter joins the reporters who can't cover the Gaza fighting because they're not allowed in, but he will be covering another angle. Joe the Plumber, who became a household name during the presidential campaign, says he's heading to Israel as a war correspondent for the conservative website PajamasTV.com. Samuel J. Wurzelbacher, Joe the Plumber to you and me, says he'll spend 10 days covering the fighting, although the fighting isn't in Israel. It's in Gaza. He'll be covering the fighting from a place where it isn't occurring. He tells WNWO-TV in Toledo that he wants to let Israel's average Joes share their story. So he doesn't have a plumbing license, but he does now have a press pass. In case you have your doubts about the guy, Dewey Gordon, formerly of the boy band Boys R Us, can explain it all to you.
If you need to know how much tax you owe,
go ask Joe the Plumber.
If you're wondering how to make your income grow,
go ask Joe the Plumber.
If you've got questions about the size of the debt, or how come only banks got the safety net? If your query hasn't been answered yet, you gotta ask Joe the Plumber. Joe. He's the one in the know. Take him all of your gripes, but don't let him work on your pipes. Joe the Plumber looms about as large as a Hummer. Wish I'd known him back last summer. Joe the Plumber. If you've been stewing over how the climate's doing,
go ask Joe the Plumber.
If you'd like to stop all those lawyers suing,
go ask Joe the Plumber.
If your TV isn't getting HD, you want to see pay movies for free, don't call Time Warner or NBC. Just call Joe the Plumber. Joe. He's the star of the show. Feel free to tap into his brains. Just don't let him work on your drains. Joe the Plumber. If he's in a band, he's the drummer. Makes Obama's day an Obama-er. Joe the Plumber. never knew why the sky is blue.
Go ask Joe the Plumber.
Or whatever happened to Live Crew.
Go ask Joe the Plumber.
He's the average Joe, but with common sense. Call him on the phone or lean over his fence. Can you write him off as a business expense? Just ask Joe the Plumber. Joe, 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 he's the guy in the very last row. He'll always make you think, just don't let him near your sink. Joe the Plumber looms about as large as a Hummer. Wish I'd known him back last summer. Joe the Plumber. Just ask Joe the Plumber. Just ask Joe the Plumber. Joe the Plumber.
Ladies and gentlemen, FEMA's still at it. Federal disaster aid officials acknowledged this week they made a huge error when they reported to the Galveston City Council that about $400 million had been spent to house residents displaced by Hurricane Ike in hotels. The actual bill is closer to $29 million, said FEMA spokeswoman Bettina Hutchings. Nobody did the math till y'all did. I didn't make that up. And for those in the Los Angeles or Southern California area, a week from Monday night, January 19th, the final live performance of Songs of the Bushmen, the Bye Bye Bushmen version, at the Largo with the Coronet in Hollywood. I'll be there with the high-value detainees. And I hope they bring their orange jumpsuits. They're the best treated high-value detainees we've got. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over the same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz shortwave, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, not on XM or Sirius satellite radio. Told you the merger was a good idea. Available as a free download at www.audible.com/LeShow. Available on your computer whenever you want it at two different locations, live and archived via the internet around the world, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like Sirius and XM unmerging if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast and the playlist of the music heard here on are available at the always evolving harryshearer.com. A typical show chapeau to the San Diego, Chicago, Pittsburgh, and Hawaii desks, and thanks as always to Pam Halstead. The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. This is subscriber-supported 89.9 KCRW Santa Monica, KCRI Indio Palm Springs, KCRU Oxnard Ventura, KCRY Mojave Antelope Valley, KCRW's handpicked music and NPR news streaming and podcasting at KCRW.com. We're a community service of Santa Monica College. In 40 seconds, 11 a.m. Stay tuned for This American Life.